kind of building up in this sermon series to Lamentations chapter 3. This series is called Crying Out Loud, and I was looking forward to preaching it myself, but about a month ago, a mentor of mine reached out and said, hey, I'm going to be in town and I'd love to preach. And he asked me what I was doing, what series I was doing, and I was thinking in my head, maybe he'll just give me a break, he'll do his own thing, but he said, it looks like you're going to be in Lamentations chapter 3, and that's in my wheelhouse. And I knew he would kind of say that, so he gets to take Lamentations chapter 3. He's probably going to do way better than I ever would anyway. So he gets the good chapter, not the down and the out. But I'm excited to have him here. I want to say this. I've been blessed to have several godly people in my life. My parents, of course, my grandparents. But outside of that, there was probably one individual that really held me accountable, challenged me, and that's Fuzzy Lake. If it wasn't for Fuzzy, I probably wouldn't be in ministry today. He taught me a lot. He taught me how to think outside the box. He taught me how to not be afraid to do things that other people aren't doing. And so I had a phone conversation with him on Friday just to touch base, and he said, we're going to do things a little bit different Sunday. I said, well, that's okay. I think they're used to different by now. So
I don't know if they're this much different.
So I want to introduce Fuzzy Lake today. He's going to be continuing our series through Lamentations.
It's interesting that I get to stand up here and do this today. I feel honored. One, that it's hard, as I know, pastoring for many years, it's hard for a pastor to give up their pulpit to somebody else, to anybody else. Doesn't matter how good they are. I don't know if anybody knows who Max Lucado is or John Maxwell or somebody like that. When I was preaching, I would probably have a hard time giving up the pulpit for even them. Because you're in a series and you got this in your head and you're going down through all these things and you want to get started and you want to do that and you've got it all figured out, and then somebody throws a kink at it. It doesn't matter how good they are. And so I'm honored to be here and really, quite frankly, honored that he even feels that way about me, because quite frankly, I don't feel like I did anything other than just, I don't teach people to live outside the box. I live outside the box. And if you want to be around me, you have to be out there with me, because I don't play inside the box. If anybody knows me, you know I just don't. The thing that interested me about Lamentations 3 was that when I read it, I just, for whatever reason, had this thought, why don't you read that backwards and see how it reads? And I know that's crazy. It's like I said, we're outside the box. Right? He told you already. He warned you already. And then the good thing about this is, if I don't do any good today, you don't have to invite me back. Right? I don't ever have to come back. It's okay. But why not read Lamentations backwards and see what it looks like? And I'm going to get to that. But I'm going to get to that in a minute. Because in order for you to understand what Lamentations is all about and what it says, you also have to understand where God was taking everybody. Now, am I right, 66 verses in that chapter, right? 66. Now, the one thing that I can tell you that my dear friend is very humble about is he knows the Bible scholarly lots better than I do. Because quite frankly, I don't care about that scholarly stuff. And I don't say that in a bad or a good way. I'm just not that way. But he could tell you why there's 66 verses. He could tell you why all that stuff. I think the guy just liked to talk a lot. And, you know, I mean, he got to the third chapter. I mean, there's only five chapters. There could have been 10, and he could have made those smaller, you know, but he did it. Decided not to. He decided to make that one lot. Now, probably, possibly, next week, he might preach on that Lamentations 3 and go from the first verse through, but I'm not going to do that today. I'm going to go to 66 through 1, and we're going to do that in a little bit. But first, you have to know why you're here and why you need to know why you're here. I believe that there's a certain amount of expectation that has to go along with your relationship with God, your relationship with Jesus Christ. And I can tell you how far back that goes.
The very first story of people who had had expectations of what Jesus could do in their life was the story of the lady who had the blood disorder and reached over to just barely could reach over and touch Jesus' cloak. And she was healed. And Jesus even said that, you're healed because you expected to be healed. Right? She knew that all she had to do was touch his cloak and she would be healed. She expected that. Now, I probably would guess that not everybody here walked in the door this morning expecting anything out of this. Some of you may just be expected, well, this is what I'm expected to do, to come every Sunday. This is what I've been doing for 50 years. Well, that's all well and good, but I'd like to change that today and say, why don't you expect something different today? Why don't you expect to be touched today? Why don't you expect the Lord to come down here and smack you in the back of the head and go, really? You've been doing what? You haven't been doing what? Why don't you be expected? Once you've walked that door, now you can walk out anytime if you don't want to be expected. You can sit there and just not be expected at all. It really won't bother me any. I'm still going to talk whether you're here or whether you're not. But I'd really like for you to be expectant, because this is how that works. Just not too long ago, we were in Israel. Now, everybody here doesn't know everything about me, and I don't have nearly enough time to go into all of that. But you have to know, to fit into the story, you have to know I'm a recovering alcoholic. I've got 38 years in, but it's an everyday battle. Because I'm a recovering alcoholic, I'm somewhat OCD. And I also like to be in charge of most everything around me. Really. And so, you can ask Joyce. My wife Joyce is so enamored with me preaching that she's told me before that we should be part of the Secret Service. And she should have a mic on her wrist and I should have an earwig. And when I got ready to say something stupid, she could go, abort, abort. And really. And so, but what I know is that I have to be in charge of most everything. So when we got ready to go to Israel, our guide told us, said, read everything you can about the brochure, read where we're going to go every day, read all that stuff, find out what we're going to do, and we're going to do all that, and that way you'll know. And I decided that, you know, I couldn't do that. I wanted to go to Israel expectant. And if I was going to go expectant, I couldn't know anything about what we were going to do. You know, as a recovering alcoholic, I'm either drinking or I'm not drinking. I'm either smoking cigarettes or I'm not smoking cigarettes. I'm either eating donuts or I'm not eating donuts. I mean, it's an all or nothing thing for me. In October of 1989, when I rededicated my life to Christ, Satan was really mad that day because he knew I was all or nothing. He knew that there was no way that he had me anymore, that when I walked away from that walk to Emmaus that Sunday evening with a rededication in my heart, that I was on fire and there was nobody was going to stop me. Now, some people got upset because I was a little bit overzealous about how much I loved Jesus. But, you know, that's the way it goes.
Well, I had some friends that weren't my friends anymore because they were not as overzealous about Jesus as I was. But from that day on, October of 1989 till this day, I've made my entire life to tell people about Jesus and to be expected. So we go over to Israel, and the first day we're in Israel, we're set to go to the Sea of Galilee. We got up that morning. This was in March. We got up that morning. It was 45 degrees, raining, and the wind was blowing about 25 miles an hour. And they tell us we're supposed to go out on a boat in the Sea of Galilee. Okay, so all the way there, I got three t-shirts, a shirt, a coat, and we're walking down the path to go to the boat. There's 63 of us all together in our group, and we're going to get on this big boat and go out in the sea. I can see the waves in the Sea of Galilee because the wind was blowing hard, and I'm going, Lord, I know you want us to be here,
and I want to be out there where Jesus walked. But really, couldn't you pick a nicer day? Really? I mean, really, that's what I was thinking. Tell me that you guys haven't ever thought that, okay? If you raise your hand and tell me you've never thought that way before, I will tell you you're fibbing to me. That's not true. So I walked down that path to go to the boat and get on a boat, and it's still raining, blowing, cold. All the plastic chairs on the boat were wet. They were wiping off with a towel. You understand, after you wipe a chair off two or three times with a towel, it gets wet and don't work anymore, right? Yeah, they used the same towel for 63 chairs. Okay? So we sit down in a chair, and we get out on Sea of Galilee, and we're out there about 10 minutes. They're playing some music. They played Lee Greenwood's God Bless America, God Bless the USA. They played some praise music like you guys did this morning. And the clouds parted. The rain stopped. The wind stopped blowing. The sun came out. I got up. I turned around and walked to the back of the boat where there wasn't a canopy over us, and I held my hand in the air. And I felt Jesus. I'd felt God like I'd never felt Him in 30 years. Because I went expecting. Now, just a side note, you know, I saw some of the holiness movement up here. Some people had their hand in the air. You know where all that came from, right? Well, all of you have fell down in your life. Has anybody not fell down? Yes, everybody's fell down. Well, if somebody's trying to help you get up, you just don't lay there with your hands like this, do you? You say, no, I don't. I'm just going to lay here. I don't need you to help me. If they're standing there with their hand down, what do? Yeah, you reach up. It's a glorious thing, isn't it? If we've all been down, some of you are down today. Some of you have been down for some time. Some of you are wondering why you're even here. And you're down, and you don't understand what's going on, and He's reaching down to grab your hand, and what are you doing? Raised my hand in the air, and He touched me. He touched me so much. Joyce walked back to me, put her arm around me, and then our guide walked back to me, and he said something to me that he should have known better. He said, "How are you feeling?" I couldn't tell him how I was. I was crying. Tears were running down my face, and I was feeling the Lord touch me like I hadn't felt in 30 years. And he asked me how I felt. I couldn't tell him. Because I went expectant, expecting anything and everything. And that's why I believe that we all should be that way every day. I've told people for years that I posted that this morning on my thoughts of the day on Facebook, is if you get up on the wrong side of the bed, you should go home this afternoon and turn that bed around and shove it against the wall. Because getting up on the wrong side of the bed is nobody's fault but yours. Now, we can't change what people do in our lives to us, and we can't change what has happened to us in our lives. But one of the things my sponsor said to me one time, he said, all those people that have hurt you, they're pouring that alcohol down your throat now? And he was right. I was doing that. I was the person that was doing that. And so I try to be expectant every day. I have to tell you also that there's somebody really, really important that all of you would know who I was talking to if I mentioned his name. He started preaching in 1954, and he preached what he called at the time crusades. We found out after a short period of time when he started to go overseas that crusades wasn't a good word to use in Europe, because the crusades were bad things. So he changed it to camp meeting and meetings and revivals and other things. Now, I thought this was fitting for today because some of you, I'm sure, have heard the news that Ukraine's in a war against Russia, right? Everybody, I would think, unless you're underneath a rock, you know about that. So Billy Graham planned a revival for Russia in 1974. And they went there, and 625,000 people showed up to that revival. 410,000 people that morning went to the altar at the very end. 410,000. Let me tell you why that is. Now, I know Billy Graham's one of the best evangelists to ever walk the face of the earth. I would bet anybody would agree with me about that. But let me tell you why 390,000 people out of that 410,000 people went to the altar that morning. Because they went expecting. They all knew when they went to hear Billy Graham what he was going to tell them. Hey, you guys know, you guys that come here on a regular basis, you know exactly what Sean's going to tell you. He's going to read from the Bible. He's going to tell you biblical truth. He's going to not hold back. He's going to tell you what you maybe don't want to hear. And he's going to hold your feet to the fire, hold you accountable, and then you're going to be blessed. I know that because I've heard him. I've watched him. I know that that's what he does. Those people came expecting to that revival. They expected to be touched by Jesus. They expected to be touched by the Lord. So you can imagine with me 400,000 people getting ready to go to the altar that day. All of them sitting there going, they're squirming in their seats going, I wonder when he's going to give the altar call. I wonder when he's going to get done talking so I can go down front. I wonder how soon he's going to do it so I can do it. They came expecting a miracle in their lives. I believe that in many ways that we don't expect a miracle enough. 2 years ago, we were at my mom's house. Many of you may know her, Betty Lake. We were at her house. I was here doing a wedding. We just got to spend some time with her. She asked me before we left if I would pray for her that she wouldn't have to go to a nursing home and she wouldn't have to leave her house until she was gone, until she was dead. I said, you know, Mom, I can't pray for that. You know, I can't pray that you won't go in a nursing home. She said, but you can pray, and I know when you pray, God answers prayers. You hear expecting? Hear expecting? So before Joyce and I left, I prayed that my mama wouldn't have to go in a nursing home and that she wouldn't have to leave her house before she died. 10 days later, neighbor found her in the yard, dropped over dead. Now some of you may look at me and go, oh my gosh, that's so sad. And I'm saying, yeah, it is sad. I would like to talk to her today. But that's what she asked me to pray for. And she knew that when I prayed for it, she was expecting, right? Now, it could have happened 2 years later. For me, it would have been better 2 years later. But 10 days, it's not my will. It's God's, right? Right? Now, Joyce said, don't anybody say amen after I ask you a question because that just eggs me on. I talk longer. And I know you have to get out to the restaurant before the Baptists get there. So it's no big deal, okay? I know I have 45 minutes. That's no problem. No, I don't really. I'm kidding. But she was expecting. She knew, she absolutely knew that if we prayed a prayer like that, that God would answer that. I knew that if I prayed a prayer like that, that God would answer it. I didn't know how he was going to answer it, and I didn't know that she was going to just drop over, but I knew he was going to answer it. I know right now if I pray a prayer that God's going to answer it. Don't always answer it the way I want him to, but he always answers it. And so, expecting. So is anybody yet expecting? Not really like in 9 months thing, but okay. Are you expecting? This morning, are you expecting? I know we're 10 minutes into it or 15 or whatever, but are you expecting yet? All right, so I'm not going to call anybody. I'm just going to look up the scripture on my phone, okay? As soon as I can find it. All right. Lamentations 3, chapter 3, verses 66 through 1. I know. Chase them down in your anger, destroying them beneath the Lord's heavens. Give them hard and stubborn hearts, and then let your curse fall on them. Pay them back, Lord, for all the evil they have done. Look at them, whether they sit or stand, I am the object of their mocking songs. My enemies whisper and mutter as they plot against me all the day long. Sorry, I'm reading fast, but I have a lot to say after this. So, Lord, you have heard the vile names they call me. You know all about the plans they have made. You have seen the vengeful plots my enemies have laid against me. You have seen the wrong they have done to me. Lord, be my judge and prove my right. prove me right. Lord, you have come to my defense. You have redeemed my life. Yes, you came when I called you, told me, do not fear. Yes, you came when I called and you told me, do not fear. As you heard when I cried, listen to my pleading, hear my cry for help. But I called on your name, Lord, from deep within the pit. The water rose over my head and I cried out, this is the end. They threw me into the pit and dropped stones on me. My enemies, whom I never harmed, hunted me down like a bird. My heart is breaking over the fate of the women of Jerusalem. Until the Lord looks down from heavens and sees, my tears flow endlessly. They will not stop. Tears stream down my eyes because of the destruction of my people. We are all filled with fear and we are trapped, devastating, and ruined. All our enemies have spoken out against us. You have discarded us as refuse and garbage among the nations. You have hidden yourself in a cloud so our prayers cannot reach you. You have engulfed us with your anger, chased us down, and slaughtered us without mercy. We have sinned and rebelled, and you have not forgiven us. Let us lift our hearts and hands to God in heaven and say, instead, let us test and examine our ways. Let us turn back to the Lord. Then why should we, mere humans, complain when we are punished for our sins? Does not the Most High send both calamity and good? Who can command things to happen without the Lord's permission? If they twist justice in the courts, doesn't the Lord see all the things? If people crushed underfoot all the prisoners of the land, if they deprive others of their rights in defiance of the Most High, for he does not enjoy hurting people or causing them sorrow. Though he brings grief, he also shows compassion because of the greatness of his unfailing love. For no one is abandoned by the Lord forever. Let them turn the other cheek to those who strike them and accept the insults of their enemies. Let them lie face down in the dust, for there may be hope at last. Let them sit alone in silence beneath the Lord's demands. And it's good to people to submit at an early age to the yoke of the discipline. So it is good to wait quietly for salvation from the Lord. The Lord is good to those who depend on him. I say to myself, the Lord is my inheritance. Therefore, I will hope in him. Great is his faithfulness. His mercies begin afresh each morning. The faithful love of the Lord never ends. Yet I still dare to hope when I remember this. I will never forget this awful time as I grieve over my loss. The thought of my suffering and homelessness is bitter beyond words. I cry out, my splendor is gone. Everything I had hoped for is from the Lord is lost. Peace has been stripped away and I have forgotten what prosperity is. He has made me chew on gravel. He has rolled me in the dust. He has filled me with bitterness and given me a bitter cup of sorrow to drink. My own people laugh at me, and all day long they sing their mocking songs. He shot his arrows deep into my heart. He has drawn his bow and made the target for his arrows. He has dragged me off the path and torn me in pieces, leaving me helpless and devastated. He has hidden like a bear or a lion waiting to attack. He has blocked my way with a high stone wall. He has made my road crooked. And though I cry and shout out, he has shut out my prayers. He has walled me in and I cannot escape. He has bound me in heavy chains. He has buried me in a dark place like those long dead. He has besieged and surrounded me with anguish and distress. He has made my skin and flesh grow old. He has broken my bones. He has turned his hand against me again and again all day long. He has led me into darkness, shutting out all light. I am the one who has seen the afflictions that come from the rod of the Lord's anger. Verse 1, I am the one who have seen the afflictions that come from the rod of the Lord's anger. And I am the one who have seen the afflictions of the rod that came from the Lord's anger. Now, one thing that I can tell you about my mama, she always did too, is whenever we went out at night when I was old enough to drive, she would lock the back door of the house. We had an old farmhouse with a skeleton key. And we were told to be home at whatever time that was, 11 o'clock and then later on midnight. We would get home, door would be locked, we would tap on Mama's bedroom door and she would walk to the kitchen and you had to wait for her to turn the light on to look at the clock to see what time it was before she opened the door. And then, if you were late, you suffered some wrath, like you've been talking about, right? But the thing is, guys, is that if we step outside the authority of the family that is looking over us, if I stepped outside the authority of my mama, there were consequences to that. There are consequences to stepping outside those Ten Commandments that God gave us. And quite frankly, when you really look at it and you boil it down, you really only need two of those. If you followed two of them, you wouldn't need the other eight. You love God with all your heart and all your mind and all your soul, and you treat everybody as you would yourself. Right? I mean, literally, we wouldn't need. You don't need to tell somebody not to kill somebody else if they love everybody else. You don't need to tell somebody that you don't want to take something else of somebody else's if they love those people. You don't need to tell anybody all that stuff. But the glory of it is here is that after you have stepped out from underneath that cover of God's grace, as I did, then the glory of it is there's God's grace that goes along with that. One thing I learned when I was in Israel that I really thought that I didn't expect to learn. I went expectant, but I didn't expect to learn this. I learned that I should have been in the Old Testament much more than I was. And when I started preaching, because I'd made such a life change, because I'd been changed so much that I'd learned everything I thought I needed to know about God's grace, I preached mostly over my career out of the New Testament and very rarely went back to the Old Testament, which when Sean told me he was in Lamentations, I'm going, oh, good God, we're in the Old Testament. But I learned in Israel that there was you can't understand what the sun feels like if there wasn't a storm in front of it. You just can't. There is no way that I would have held my hand in the air and felt the warmth on my hand and be touched by the Lord if it hadn't been raining and pitiful right before that happened. There was no way that I would be on fire for the Lord and be able to tell you about how God's grace can transform you if I hadn't been that one that was in the pit so deep and so low that there weren't enough arms to put together to reach up to grab his arm. There's no way I could explain all that to you if I hadn't been there before. There's no way that I would understand that if I hadn't been that there before. There's no way that any of you can understand it. I know when you're in the middle of it, you're going, oh, I just don't understand how he could put one more thing on top of me. I've been working the last 4.5 years as a hospice chaplain in a hospice house, 36-bed facility. And several years ago, about 3 years ago, actually, this lady came in and she was on her way out. She knew she was terminal and she was very talkative and she knew everything that was going on. And we had a conversation and she said, now I know the Lord told us in Scripture that he would never give us more than we could bear. But apparently he thinks my shoulders are a lot bigger than I think they are. I think that's true for many of us. I think we get so weighted down that we forget to be expectant. That we forget what there is on the other side. Because there is something on the other side. I am walking, living proof of that. Now, last August, I got COVID really bad, kind of like Sean, I suppose. And I don't know how anybody can compare anybody else with COVID because it's so far across the spectrum. And I'm not going to talk about anything political this morning at all, just me, myself. Why I had COVID laying in bed, gasping for air, I can tell you that I was never once scared of dying. I was scared of when I was going to get my next breath and where it was going to come from because I literally didn't know. But I was not scared of dying. You know why that is? Because I'm expecting. You know, when I walk in there, the first thing I'm going to do, I'm going to give Jesus a big hug. And then I'm going to look over my shoulder, and I'm going to see Mama standing there, a big smile on her face and her arms out, my brother Dennis standing there, and all the other people that went before me waiting to hug me. I'm expectant. I know that's once. I know I'm not going to live forever. I'm pretty positive that everybody else in here should know that also. None of us are getting out of this world alive unless the rapture happens, and then you be by yourself, I suppose, if you don't know Jesus. But this is what I want to tell you about how all that fits together today. I know if you read Lamentations 3, that many of you have felt exactly like that. Whether you read it forwards or whether you read it backwards, it doesn't matter. You felt like that if you don't feel like that today. Many of you may feel like that today. And the glory of it is that God can change that for you. God can make that, He can make you a new person. All you have to do is be expectant and ask Him. So I don't know what you usually do here at the end. And I'm going to tell you a little short story, and then I'm just going to turn it over to Sean, because I believe that there's somebody in here that really truly needs extra prayer, but I don't want to spend a lot more time. They told me a joke one time what the clock meant in the back of the church for a pastor. It really doesn't mean anything. Well, I looked at the clock, and I do notice that I'm probably over a little bit. I was in a little church down in Marengo, Indiana, many years ago. I went there to do a youth revival, and I was supposed to speak on Friday night, be there all day Saturday, and then be there Sunday morning to preach at the church. Friday night, it rained horribly. It thundered, lightning. It was a complete bust. Nobody showed up. Saturday rained most of the day, and about 20 of the 100, 125 kids that were supposed to be there showed up. And quite frankly, I didn't give them my best. I was upset at the weather, and I was upset at everything else going on, and I did not give them everything I should have gave them that day, the 20 that were there. And Sunday morning, Saturday night, I was convicted of that. So Sunday morning, I go in to preach, and I did exactly what I did this morning. Every time I went somewhere to preach, even in my own church, I laid my hands on every pew, and I prayed for every pew before people got there. I did that this morning. Those of you who were here saw me walking through the sanctuary, touching the pews. And you know you don't have to have your eyes closed, right, to pray? Please don't close your eyes while you're driving and praying. So I was praying. I prayed for every pew in this place. I did that morning in Marengo. I also know that there's something that Joyce and I talked about a lot. We don't like double altar calls. You know, I have an issue when you do an altar call and then they have several people want prayer or whatever, and they come up front, and the pastor doesn't think that everybody's up front, so he says, play that one more time. Let's do another one. And yeah, that's just not me. I did altar call, and I kneeled down at the altar, and I said a prayer that if anybody in that sanctuary needed Jesus in their lives that day, that they would come up front and pray with me or pray with somebody else in the church. And there were 8 or 10 out of the 150 that were there that came up front. And then I became convicted that there was somebody else. And then I became, and I know you've had this feeling where you've argued with God. I know you're telling me this, God, but you know, I don't do a double altar call. I know you say there's somebody else out there, but I'm not saying it. You know, and I had this, and not only that, what would Joyce think? You know, I'm just not doing it. So on my knees, I'm having this argument with God as people are praying to give their lives to Christ or rededicate their lives. And out of the corner of my eye, I see this little old man, about 5'5", walk down the center aisle of the church. And I thought, okay, well, I'm not going to have to do that. He must be the guy. But he didn't stop at the altar. This is what he did. I've been coming to this church for a very long time. And I've never stood in front of this pulpit. But the Lord has told me that there's somebody else out there that needs to come forward. Not lying. And an entire family of 4, mom, dad, son, and daughter, came to the altar And they told me that they hadn't been in church in a very long time. And they felt like they needed to come that morning expecting a miracle. And I was having an argument with God about not letting that miracle happen. And I don't remember this guy's name, but man, he was good. He could have done the whole sermon. I mean, in less than 2 minutes, he had more people at the altar than I did, yeah. But the truth is, as we get ready to go into our, I guess you have a last song, right? I would assume that Sean would be up here to pray with people. I don't know how you do that. I noticed, like said, the whole hand in the air, he had a couple of it. You know, I grew up in the United Methodist Church, and we didn't put our hand in the air. You know why? Because we just didn't do that. And when I got out into the holiness movement, I was watching people do that. And for a little while, I was like, because I grew up on a farm. I knew if you were the tallest person in the field in a thunderstorm, you were the one going to get struck by lightning, right? So I was like, you know, if you feel the Spirit touch your heart, you get your hand in the air and you reach for Him. Because He's going to touch you, I promise you. And then if you don't reach for Him, He's still going to grab you, because it don't matter. So as we get ready, do you want to say a prayer before our song? And we'll invite you. I don't know how you end, so I'm like, I'm done.
You're going to stand over here? All right. Okay. Shannon's mic. I told you last week, you know, we struggle through this book, I think. We look at the chaos and the suffering and the brokenness, and we're not far removed from that in life. We all experience suffering and pain and heartache, and certainly coming out of this last few years, we've experienced maybe, you know, as a nation, in terms of sickness and death, we've experienced far more than we've been used to for a while. And I told you last week that we're on the other side of something. We're on the other side of the cross. And this is what Fuzzy was talking about this morning. You know, the hinge point for this whole book for me is verses 22 through 25 or 26. Because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed. You know, we ask that question, the pain and the heartache, how much more, how much more? And when we ask, how much more, God, can there be anything else? We forget that we are still breathing. You know, because of the Lord's great love, we're not consumed, for His compassions never fail. They're new every morning, great is your faithfulness. The ultimate symbol of His faithfulness is this behind me. It's that cross. That's the symbol of His faithfulness to willingly lay down His life for people that experience heartache and pain and question why. And the comforting thing for me, the reason I look at these verses and I can say, like the author, the Lord is good to those whose hope is in Him, to the one who seeks Him, because when I look at the cross, I see a God who willingly enters the suffering and the brokenness of life. He's not a God that stands off at a distance. He's not a God that looks down and says, oh, look at all this pain, look at all this heartache. He's a God that comes down and puts Himself right in the middle of it and experiences it, not having to, but choosing to. And so that's the hope in the middle of this whole thing. And then next week, we're going to go right back into the heartache and the pain. But we can't ever forget the hope, the compassion, His unending love, His faithfulness. So I want the worship team to come forward this morning as they sing the last song. You know, we'll mix it up just a hair. As they sing the last song, I always invite you to just reflect on what you've heard. Spend some time listening for that tender whisper for God's voice this morning. But I also want to let you know that I will be up here available for prayer. And I'm sure Fuzzy would be available for prayer as well. Maybe you are that person. Maybe you are the one that's saying, you know what, life is absolutely horrendous right now. and I don't know if I can make it through one more day. And I would just like to feel the presence of God. Today's the day. Today's the day. We'd like to have you come up, and I'd love to pray with you. I'd love to answer any questions that you may have about how do you experience God's compassion, his faithfulness, his unfailing love. And so I'll invite you to do that as they sing this song. And when the song's concluded, I have a few announcements, but we'll continue to remain available after service for you.